Welcome to Bicom's Hudion Weekly Podcast. My name is James Serene, Bicom's CEO. I'm joined by Richard Pater, director in Israel. And we are delighted to have with us Gil Hoffman, who is the chief political correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and analyst of Israeli politics. He joins us live from the Knesset. And in the background, you'll be able to hear the bustle of the political commentariat analyzing the latest Likud primaries. Gil, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure being with you, James and Richard.
So, Gil, I just wanted to start off by trying to understand what the results from the Likud primaries yesterday really means. Was this a victory for Bibi Netanyahu as the leader of the Likud? Is this his top list, or are there people on that list who are not known as Netanyahu loyalists who are maybe more independent? Can you give us a sense of that?
So first of all, it's important to remember that Netanyahu didn't have to run in this primary. He was chosen as the leader of the Likud already more than 3 years ago. And so the Likud is running its Knesset slate for the April 9th election. And all we know for sure is that Netanyahu didn't want Gideon Saar to be high on the list, who he sees as someone who would undermine him. And Gideon Saar ended up being on the list, which I think is sufficiently high for this to be a loss for Netanyahu. He can paint it and say, oh, I just didn't want him to be first. But there's not a lot of difference between who's first, third, and fourth on the list. And the person who is immediately after Netanyahu on the list is the speaker of this building, of the Knesset, Yuli Edelstein, who himself is a very impressive person who could very well run for prime minister in the future. Certainly, winning this primary put himself in a place to do that. And so I think that this primary was a loose situation for Netanyahu, and he only made it worse by highlighting Gideon Saar and really building him up as an alternative.
So you think Saar performed better because of that, or do you think he would have performed even better had he not been attacked?
There's no doubt that Gideon Saar performed better. He was on the sidelines, had taken a break from politics for more than 4 years. People could have forgotten about him, forgotten what his accomplishments were when he was a cabinet minister. Instead, he was on the national news. It's very highly rated every night for a week. And that's only because of Netanyahu. He should send him flowers.
Yeah. And what were the other big surprises of the Likud primary?
You've seen Nir Barkat, the mayor of Jerusalem until recently, come from out of nowhere, had not been a member of Likud until recently, spent a lot of money in trying to meet every Likud Central Committee member, brought them in on VIP tours of Jerusalem, and apparently that money worked, that investment worked. And even though he had a reputation of being less hawkish than much of the primary, he did extremely well, as did Yoav Gallant, a former deputy chief of staff of the IDF, who came in also from Kulanu, from a different party, and very quickly acquainted himself with the members of the party. And both of them are there in the top 10 and position themselves also as possible alternatives when Netanyahu will eventually have to leave his post.
Well, what does this tell us about the Likud membership who voted? I mean, is this a more moderate list? Is this less representative of some of the more traditional Likud constituencies that we've seen in the past? How would you analyze that?
If anything, it defies the reputation of the Likud as becoming increasingly hawkish. For years, people have been saying that you have to make sure that you're against a Palestinian state. You have to, Barkat put out a picture of himself attacking a terrorist, even though it was 4 years ago. But the people who were selected are not as hawkish as people would have expected them to be. You have people who were formerly in Kadima did very well in this primary, whether it's Barkat, whether it's Tzachi Hanegbi, Ze'ev Elkin were both in Kadima before. This is a list that can't be deemed extremist by the world.
Yeah. And what about that scenario that could play out where you have a situation where Prime Minister Netanyahu wins the election, but he's unable to form a coalition because maybe people won't serve in the coalition because he's been indicted? Who are the people, who are the top people in Likud that are going to be maneuvering to try and replace him if there's any situation where Netanyahu might be leaving the political stage?
First, let's just explain the legal process. What Netanyahu is going to receive before the election, probably in the next 2 weeks, is an indictment pending a hearing. It's not an indictment. Yet the people of Israel are going to think that it is an indictment because they don't understand that nuance. And then it's going to have to be explained. Maybe they'll get it. They have 2 months to figure it out. But what the indictment itself is only expected by the end of 2019, maybe beginning of 2020. And there have been enough leaders of parties who have said, we would join a government led by Netanyahu after this initial stage, which is technically a meaningless one. But if he gets indicted for real, we're gone. So Netanyahu shouldn't have a problem forming a government. Benny Gantz, Moshe Kahlon, Orly Levy have all said they would join the government at this stage, but would not sit under a prime minister who's been indicted. What could very well happen is that when that indictment comes, the government of Netanyahu could fall apart, the Likud could refuse to replace him, and somebody else could be given a chance to form a government and fail, which could initiate an election, or someone else could be given a chance to form a government and succeed. And then you've got Netanyahu then as opposition leader. I don't think he'd stay then. You then would have a competition for leader of Likud after Netanyahu, which I think would be the most fascinating election I've been around for anyway, and I've been covering politics for 20 years.
Just a query on that. I mean, I thought Moshe Kahlon had said he wouldn't serve with Bibi Netanyahu if the Attorney General has said he should be indicted.
Indicted, for real, later, in a year.
Ah, but an Attorney General announcement in the next couple of weeks that says he recommends an indictment, you're saying Kahlon would still serve with Netanyahu. He would wait until the hearing.
It's an indictment pending a hearing. It's really, really complicated legal stuff. 99% of the people aren't going to understand it, James. That's going to throw a real wrench into this election, and that it'll all depend on how soon it takes people to figure that out, that this is a meaningless legal step.
But nonetheless, I mean, the step is that the Attorney General is saying he believes there is enough evidence for him to be indicted, although pending a hearing.
Correct, exactly.
Yeah, okay, understood. So let's talk a little bit about Benny Gantz and what's happening there. And we've seen Benny Gantz's resilience parties moving up in the polls around 22 seats. He still doesn't really have the numbers. He needs to peel away support from the Likud and other parties. Do you think his intervention yesterday is going to help or hinder that? And that's the interview with Yediot and what he said about learning the lessons from Gaza disengagement and not wanting to control other people. How did you see that?
Okay, so first of all, there was a poll last night indicating that if Gantz would run together with Lapid, they would both receive 35 seats, and that would be more than the Likud would receive. The attempts to unite Gantz and Lapid together last time I checked are not going very well. There is still time until the 21st of February when lists have to be submitted here in the Knesset to the Central Elections Committee, which has taken over this building while the members of Knesset are away. The interview that he gave yesterday, I think, was disastrous. He, until a week ago, had a strategy of not saying anything. And there was a lot of merit to that strategy, because if you don't say anything, no one's going to disagree with you. The worst thing you can have if you want to succeed in politics is an opinion. And so I would stay away from having those. So now that we know he has opinions and he started to reveal what they are, he's decided to still avoid the press and not give an interview to a real journalist. Instead, he gave an interview to a singer together with a stand-up comedian, which looks ridiculous. It doesn't look professional. The questions that were asked were actually tough questions, and I think he fumbled them, in part because the interviewers wrote it in such a way of taking out of context. He didn't say, I want to have another disengagement, another unilateral withdrawal. What he said was that when we had the withdrawal from Gaza, it didn't end up tearing apart the nation because the army handled it well. It handled it with a lot of sensitivity. And that lesson should be applied in the future. But that doesn't mean that he wants to go tomorrow and evacuate Jews from their homes without a peace agreement. And I think that he could, Netanyahu in particular, with some of the media, really presented that falsely for whoever didn't read the interview itself. But that made him lose potentially a lot of potential support on the right, on the center right. He lost support on the left by not ruling out unconditionally joining a government led by Netanyahu between now and when the actual indictment happens in up to a year. And so you've lost the right, the left, the center, who's supposed to be his political base, don't like people going to extremes. And by avoiding the press, James, Richard, this is an extreme. It's an extreme thing to do, to treat the press like garbage. Netanyahu does it. Benny Gantz was supposed to be the alternative. His behavior has shown maybe he's not an alternative, at least when it comes to something so fundamental.
Is he not scheduled to do more interviews?
We don't know yet. he wanted to see how this one went first. And I don't think he's received positive coverage by anyone. And that's in part because people, journalists, are upset about what's been done. It might sound like I am, but I think it's more the top Hebrew journalists in Israel who'd expect to receive the first interview with him and lost out to a stand-up comedian and a singer.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's often the case that people think they're going to be given soft questions by non-political editor interviews, and actually they end up being more difficult. But I think what's interesting, I mean, looking exactly what Gantz said, I mean, what he said was not necessarily that controversial. He said, we need to learn the lessons from the engagement. And he made a blanket statement about the Palestinians saying, you know, we don't want to control them. But it's what you read into those statements and how you then spin them. And maybe the ambiguity that he left without being more specific, which I guess is the lesson he needs to learn.
James, it's a spin. He's a victim that there's spin on every word said by a politician. And Netanyahu spun it as if Abbas himself endorsed Gantz last night. First of all, it wasn't Abbas himself. It was a spokesman. And second of all, it doesn't make any sense for Abbas to want there to be a unilateral withdrawal. The unilateral withdrawal in Gaza hurt Abbas tremendously. It led to him being overthrown in Gaza by Hamas, but it played into the hands of Abbas's internal political enemies. Why in the world would he want Gantz to make a deal not with him? It just defies logic, but Netanyahu has ways of spinning and doing it.
Yeah, no, understood. And just finally, can we talk about some of the smaller parties and what you think might be happening with some of these amalgamations? I mean, we've got quite a lot of parties who are polling and between sort of 4 and 5 seats and who potentially are in danger of not making it into the Knesset. And we've got the final party lists that need to be submitted by, what is it, the 21st. What are the mergers that you think are most likely?
The Lapid-Gantz merger is what has to happen for Netanyahu to be defeated, apparently. Except if Gantz merges with 2-3 small parties and then makes Lapid so irrelevant that he loses his support. That's possible. It's just difficult because Orly Levy, who runs a socioeconomic party and is therefore attractive and has support from some of underclass of immigrants from the North Africa and the Middle East, she won't come cheap. And she's a difficult person to work with. She came from a party in Israel Beiteinu that required discipline, and she wasn't disciplined. And she's been very critical of Gantz in every campaign ad that she's put out over the last month. Not only critical, but nasty. And so if he can't get her, then all you have is Adina Bar Shalom, who is the leader, first but not leader, strange situation in a party that isn't getting any votes at all right now, called Achi Israeli. She's a Haredi, ultra-Orthodox, Sephardi feminist who's the daughter of the former mentor of the Sephardi ultra-Orthodox Shas party, Rabbi Obadiah Yosef. She's charismatic. She's smart. She's impressive. She's not enough.
Yeah. What about on the right? Do you think that there'll be a point where Yisrael Beiteinu or Jewish Home decide to just join Likud because they're not polling high enough?
No, I think that the religious Zionist parties are going to try to run together. They're not going to join Likud in the end. I think Netanyahu asking for more reserved slots on his list was just an attempt to control his list better. I don't see the parties further to the right of Likud jumping to be 21 on the Likud list. That's not attractive, and they all think that they're going to cross the threshold. Their leaders have ego, and they're not going to give in. And I don't think Netanyahu realistically even thought that that could happen. He was just using the potential of that as an excuse to get more reserved slots for himself from the Likud. Would not have given that to him otherwise.
And what about Kulanu? What's the story with Kulanu? I mean, do you think there's a merger there in the offing? I mean, they're not doing too well.
I think that Kahlon thinks very highly of himself and his accomplishments as finance minister, and he's going to try to run again, and he'd rather get 4 seats as leader of a party than join Likud and be number 2 to Netanyahu. He's been that before, and he didn't like it very much.
Yeah, understood. Okay, well, I think we will leave it there. Can I just finally ask, what's your prediction for the elections? Do you just see a Netanyahu win, and we just go from there? Is it as simple as that?
I encourage people to Google Gil Hoffman 10 predictions for 2019. And you'll see that I've predicted there that Netanyahu will win the election, but then would lose power after the indictment by the end of the year. And that's why I call this, as other analysts have, a midterm election here. I think the next election is going to be much more interesting. But meanwhile, stay tuned to www.jpost.com and Gil_Hoffman on Twitter. And thank you for supporting Viacom that does such wonderful work.
Thank you. Thank you, Gil. And thank you for joining us.